Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. When peace activists in the 8th voting district of suburban northern Illinois found their Democrat Melissa Bean sounding too much like a Bush Republican, they decided to switch tactics. Bill Scherr, activist, publisher, and scholar of religion, decided to transform himself into a candidate for U.S. Congress. He and his moderate party were able to collect the 15,000 votes necessary to get a place on the ballot. What happened next has changed politics in the region. Bill Scherr has found himself with access to the debates and the media. Here's Bill Scherr answering a question about the need to lower America's dependency on oil.
The Bush administration came up with an energy policy and passed a bill, which I like to call the Enron Halliburton Energy Bill. It was written in secret by oil company executives. We don't even know their names. And this bill gave billions of dollars of taxpayer subsidies to these same oil companies while they are racking up hundreds of billions of dollars in record-making profits, and we're paying prices at the gas pump that are approaching $4 a gallon. The incumbent Democrat voted with Bush for that bill. So would her Republican challenger. I support something called the Apollo Energy Program, which is a massive undertaking similar to what we did back when I was your age, and we put a person on the moon in 10 years, a major financial scientific commitment to develop new, renewable, safe, clean, independent energy sources that will be owned by the people of the United States on a royalty-issuing basis to private corporations. That will be our oil. That will be your future.
The 8th Congressional District in Northern Illinois is similar in many ways to the 2nd voting district in Connecticut. There are luxurious suburbs, working families, and in general, a strong emphasis on education. The Democratic Party has been investing heavily in getting its candidate elected in this strong Republican district. But as we shall hear, Bill Scherr is not convinced that getting a Democratic majority in the House is as important as gaining a peace majority there that can stand up to the militancy of the Bush White House. He's running to make a point that voters in Lake, McHenry, and Cook counties, Illinois, deserve more of a voice in how their country is run and when U.S. forces return from Iraq. Here is another portion of a recent debate. We listen and try to imagine what the debate would sound like without Scherr's voice in it.
Mr. Scherr, you're the only anti-war candidate on this stage. Can you explain why pulling out now out of Iraq is a good idea, given that the country is likely to descend into full-blown chaos if we leave? Doesn't the U.S. have a responsibility to finish what it started, as President Bush argues?
Eric, the country's already in full-blown chaos. I'm going to Washington as our next congressperson, and we're going to bring our troops home and take care of them when they get here. In 2002, and by the way, the incumbent Democrat has voted with the Bush administration in this war every step of the way, so would the Republican challenger. In 2002, when she was running for Congress, and this war was just being discussed, and there were 80% public opinion in favor of the war, she had to come out and take a stand on the war, and she took a stand in favor of it. I was out marching in the streets trying to stop it. In 2004, when the war was underway and she was running for Congress again, she also came out again in favor of the war. And since taking her seat in 2005, has consistently voted with the Bush administration in favor of the war every step of the way, and as I said, so would her Republican challenger. We should have never begun this war to begin with. Now that we're there, we have to do what we can to help people fix it, but keeping our military there as a target in the middle of a civil war is not going to fix it. In fact, it just makes things worse.
I'm going to tweak the question a little bit for the other two candidates on the stage. What progress do you want to see? When do you think we should start bringing troops home from Iraq? Do you just give the president a blank check, or is there kind of guidelines you're using personally as you try and inform your own decision?
Okay, and Melissa Bean gets the first response.
I think it is important that Congress hold the President and the Department of Defense accountable to progress in Iraq. I visited Iraq. I spent time with our soldiers and our generals there to understand the challenges that they face on the ground. Unlike Mr. Scherr, who would have opposed providing the funding to our troops who are already there in Iraq and not given them the resources, the tools, the armor that they needed to protect themselves. I did support that funding. Unlike my opponent, Mr. McSweeney, I don't give the president an A for execution because clearly we weren't planning to the degree that we should have for the situation once we got there. There has been progress in Iraq on the governmental side, moving forward from a transitional government to a democratically elected government, and the people of Iraq said they want a democratic and a unified Iraq. Prime Minister Maliki visited us in Washington and had a joint session of Congress and urged us to continue to support their ability to now provide for their own sovereign security so that we could stand down. Unfortunately, since that time, the situation on the ground has deteriorated, and we have to monitor closely to make sure that the Iraqi people are still choosing to move forward towards a unified Iraq and provide for their own security so we can bring our troops home soon.
And David McSweeney.
This is a very difficult situation. I have a nephew who's an Army specialist in Iraq. 3,000 Americans have lost their lives, but we need to complete the mission and achieve victory. And what that means, and there are three different things we should be looking at. We need to, number one, defeat the terrorists. The al-Qaeda terrorists have come across the border from Syria. Number two, we need to help the Maliki government transition to a democratic form of government. And number three, we need to adequately train the Iraqi troops. And Congressman Bean, you've now misrepresented my quote. I was on Jeff Berkowitz's TV show. If you go back and look at the tape, what I said is that our troops and the president deserve an A for the military implementation, and I stand by that 100%. I'm the only consistent voice in this race who will fight to support our troops. When the resolution to support our troops came on the floor of the House, Congresswoman Bean voted against it before she voted for it. If you want to have a consistent voice that will complete the mission, that will stop havoc from taking over the Middle East with Iran being a nuclear force, then vote for Dave McSweeney.
And we've been listening to a portion of a debate in Illinois between 8th District challengers, independent moderate Bill Scherr and David McSweeney, the Republican, as well as incumbent Democrat Melissa Bean. Connecticut residents may have noted an ironic similarity in the tactics being used by the Democrat, as she accused Scherr of not wanting to fund or support the troops because he had called for their withdrawal from Iraq. Republican incumbent Rob Simmons used the same tactic during his first debate against Democrat Joe Courtney, who has also said he too would set a date for U.S. troops to leave Iraq.
Joe, we're running for Congress. We're not running for president. You're not running for commander-in-chief. You talk about a change of policy. If you were running for president, you might have some chance of changing that presidential policy. But in Congress, the tools that we have to change the policies are cutting funding for the troops. I hope you're not suggesting that the policy change and we not support our troops with the funding necessary.
I asked peace activist Bill Scherr to talk about the work he was doing prior to his decision to run for office and to describe his work on the website of the Peace Majority, peacemajority.org, where members of Congress are rated in terms of their ability to vote for peace and against war.
Well, we have a project called the Peace Majority Report, and it still is in operation, but if you go to it at peacemajority.org, you'll notice that its home page is several months out of date due to the campaign. But we have, and our events are somewhat out of date, but we have kept up to date on our ratings, which is a congressional scorecard system on peace and war votes. And that's current. It's the most comprehensive up-to-date scorecard, peace-related scorecard in existence, and it gets wide use with media and activist groups.
Let's go through what kind of information we might find out about a candidate. Let's take, for example, in Connecticut, Robert Simmons. And Rob Simmons is mentioned on your website. Why don't you just go through and tell listeners what they can learn about this candidate in terms of how he scores on the peace quota?
Right. He has a 12% score with the Peace Majority scorecard, and that's out of a possible 100%. So that is a very low score, even for a member of this Congress. By way of contrast, the Republican Ron Paul in Texas has a score in the mid-70s. The reason that I'm running is because if you click on the scorecard rating of our incumbent, a freshman Democrat, she has a scorecard rating of about 30%, which is also very weak on peace. And so primarily that's the reason that I'm politically involved. And we feel that election cycles have to be used to take a stand, to try and take control of the government itself, or at least take control of the public debate. So, for instance, in our particular district, the Democratic incumbent and the Republican challenger are both pro-war and weak on peace. They both supported the Iraq War from the earliest discussions in 2002. They've continued to support it. They will continue to support it, and they will fail to prevent the next war. And we consider that most definitely weak on peace. So we want to get, and if I were not in the race, the whole issue of peace and security and the Iraq war and the so-called war on terror, that wouldn't even be part of the debate. It wouldn't even be on the table.
Let's look at the vote that would have barred funds for an Iran war. We'll note that Rob Simmons did not vote the way you wanted him to.
We wanted yes vote on that, and he voted no. This was trying to anticipate, you know, another Iraq scenario and trying to cut off funding for military activities in advance. And we like it in particular because we're referring to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, to Congress's war-making power, which we feel they abdicated in the Iraq conflict. So this was a good, strong, important vote.
But there has been some reporting that there are, in fact, cross-border operations and even covert operations being run in Iran.
Sure, and I've seen those reports also, and there were similar activities in Iraq before the massive invasion.
Just in terms of the politics of this election, we're looking at a significant possibility that some incumbents will lose and the balance of power between Democrats and Republicans will shift. Just talk about your race in that context.
Right. Well, when it comes to politics, Peace Majority Report is explicitly nonpartisan. And some groups say they're nonpartisan and they really lean one way or the other. We are truly and genuinely nonpartisan. We don't score any issues other than war or peace, so we leave all the kind of economic and cultural and social issues off the table. And we're trying to build a true peace majority, and that embraces, you know, people from the whole political spectrum, Greens and Libertarians, as well as a whole lot of Democrats and Independents and some Republicans. So the numbers speak for themselves. Really what we look at is the incumbents. And if the incumbent is what we call weak on peace, then we feel that's a bad incumbent, and we want everyone in that area to know and cultivate alternatives, whether they be from the same party, the major opposition party, or independents or smaller third parties. But we're interested in just letting people know where these votes fall and where these ratings fall, and it's up to each local district and the population of that district to do what they will with it. And a lot of activist groups do use our scorecard. A lot of media do use our scorecard to, as they use other scorecards and other types of issues, to try and identify who is strong on peace and who is weak on peace.
Now, looking down the list of folks that are involved with this organization, we see many folks from peace and justice work and organizational work like Medea Benjamin, and then some others that might not fall into that category. Rabbi Lerner, he's with the Tikkun community, spiritual progressives, Veterans for Common Sense. We see women's organizations, Susan Scheer of Women's Action, and also Kathy Kelly of Voices in the Wilderness, and Pat Clark of the Fellowship of Reconciliation.
Well, these are our editorial board advisors, and they have no governance role, but they're personal advisors to the editor. The more interesting thing is if you look at the right-hand side of every page of the Peace Majority Report, you will see categories of different kinds of groups that are working for peaceful security. They include military groups, they include religious groups, occupational groups, advocacy groups, political groups, think tanks, whole laundry list, and that's where the interest is. And again, this is a completely nonpartisan, what we call spectrum neutral on the political spectrum, because our focus is totally on peaceful security. And in the peace community, there are really two large halves. There's the peace and justice half, which is represented by people like Badia Benjamin at Code Pink and Leslie Kagan at United for Peace and Justice. But there's a lesser-known half that's the peace and security half, and they're represented by, like, the Carnegie Institute and various kinds of think tanks and consulting groups. And we embrace and include all of those within the peace community, and we try and cross-fertilize that dialogue so that people get serious about cultivating a new political, social, and moral majority that is strong on peace.
Bill Scherr, you and wife Randy have been in this district, the 8th District of Illinois in the northern section of the state, for 28 years.
Right.
I want to talk with you about where you were coming from, let's say, before the Bush administration came to power in 2000, because it looks like your background in religious studies and law and you're politically active might have taken you down a very different road had George W. Bush not come to office. Is that true?
Yes. There are many people who look at September 11th, 2001 as the watershed that changed everything for them in terms of their politics and approach to life and the nation. My watershed was September 14th, 2001. September 14th, 2001 is when the President of the United States went to ground zero, stood on a pile of rubble with a bullhorn. Behind him was draped, visible to the cameras, a banner that said 6,000 more reasons to kill them all. Mission accomplished was not his first banner problem. He had a banner problem back then, too. And of course, he didn't put it there, but there was no asking to take it down, no repudiation. And he sounded, frankly, like some rabble-rouser in the streets, stirring up and threatening. And on September 14th, 2001, I knew that we as a nation were going to take the wrong direction in response to this tragic event and this wonderful opportunity that was brought to us with this tragic event that we squandered and twisted and distorted. And so from that point on, Randy and I knew that we had to rededicate ourselves to trying to help the country with healing and peace building. That process is still going on. So, yes, that was a huge day for us. And I just want to say, I never let people just blame this on Bush. You know, Bush, he had 80% public opinion. He manipulated it, true. The media allowed him to do that. Both parties caved. The Congress caved. We can never tag this just to Bush and think that getting rid of Bush is the problem. The problem is us. The challenge and opportunity and the solution is us. We have to get serious about rebuilding our approach to security on the values of peace rather than aggressive war. And that's not just George Bush. You could substitute him with anybody. We still have to come to grips with this. I'm also one of the co-founders of Voters for Peace, and that was an organization that was started with $1 million in support, and it's all about helping the peace movement become the peace vote. So I remain kind of generally interested in all these activities.
Well, there's a lot to talk about here, and I had hoped to discuss the issue of corruption. Our former governor, John Rowland, went to prison for corruption, and in Illinois, your former governor, George Ryan, was convicted of corruption. But we'll have to save that for another conversation. Here in Connecticut, we're not seeing a lot of coverage of voters' groups who are working for peace. Talk about the press and the peace vote and peace candidates.
The whole system certainly skews toward supporting a government position rather than supporting a citizen's position. And it's kind of like the old movie Citizen Kane, when they were ginning up support for the Spanish-American War, and he sent a photographer down there, the William Randolph Hearst character. He said, go get me some pictures of the war. And he goes, there is no war. And he goes, never mind about that. You provide the pictures, I'll provide the war. And we still have a lot of that with the media today, and it was transparent in 2002, 2003 with their utter failure to stand up against all of these claims and manipulations and, in fact, becoming almost like cheerleaders for this thing. So, yeah, you'll still see it. Now, in our particular case here in Illinois, in our own race, we have assertively forced ourselves upon the media. We have done and said certain things that make it impossible for them to ignore us, because they wanted to at the beginning. Some of the local press wanted to ignore us in the beginning, but we didn't allow that. So I would guess that in our particular district, the sentiment for and against the war is pretty close to even, whereas in the country as a whole, certainly a majority has now turned against the war. So that's still a bit of a challenge in that respect, but we're in a three-way race where there are, the other two candidates are both pro-war and weak on peace. So we have the opportunity to capture all of the pro-peace votes ourselves, except for the fact that there's a number of Democratic partisans who are extremely reluctant to leave their party no matter what. And so we have run into that to some degree. We kind of peel them off one by one in groups here and there. But there are some people that's all they care about is, do you have a D or an R after your name? They have this whole sense that we have to, quote, take back, quote, we have to take back the House. And, you know, I don't believe that that matters. They look at people that have seniority in the House, and all these people that have seniority in the House, most of them are good, strong progressives because they come from safe seats, mostly urban metropolitan areas that have large progressive communities, large minority communities. So there's a disproportionate sense that the Democrats are the progressive party, the Democrats are the peace party. But you look at the whole thing with Lieberman, you look at Zell Miller, you look at all the kinds of Democrats like the Democratic incumbent out here, and that's not an accurate picture at all. The Democrats are weak on peace. They've never had the political courage, the moral courage to stand up and offer an alternative. And so we are facing a little bit of that with in terms of the voters as a whole. So what's totally clear to me is that if every voter were to vote for what they believe in and who they believe in a three-way race, I would win that race. A two-way race would be a little bit harder against the Republican because, as I said, it's a conservative area.
Talk about how the economy perhaps has divided voters in your area.
Well, our platform, the platform of my campaign has four planks, and one of them, of course, is peaceful security, which we talked about. Another one is working families, and that has everything to do with the economy. It has to do with tax policy, trade policy, immigration policy, all of these laws that skew in favor of wealth over work. And that is an issue here. Now, yes, we are in one of the most wealthy and prosperous districts in the nation, but wealth is a funny thing. I mean, if you have great wealth, that all goes into the mean average statistics, but it does not deny the fact that substantial double-digit percentages of the population in any district do not have great wealth. Many, many of them are poor, working poor. The vast majority of them are middle class. So just the fact that we have all this kind of collective average wealth doesn't mean that there aren't huge chunks of voters out there that feel a totally different economy. And we see that in the nation as a whole. I mean, the incumbents look at the economy and they look at the measures they look at and say, look, the economy's doing great. Well, tell that to the people who haven't had a real wage increase in 40 years. I mean, it doesn't look so great there. Tell that to the people who are working longer and longer and longer just to try and catch up with staying even, or those who can't work at all because their job's been insourced or outsourced. So, yeah, these are big and important issues. And, in fact, and our campaign is unique in the national independent third-party campaign is that we peeled off a half dozen of the biggest, most politically active labor unions that left the Democratic incumbent and have come over and financially backed our campaign and provided volunteers to our campaign as well. And these are places like the Teamsters, the Steelworkers, Machinists and Aerospace Workers, SEIU, Unite. These are big unions.
Now, the unions locally in the 2nd District where we are supporting Joe Courtney, the Democrat, to a large extent. And I've spoken with a lot of the union members that say things, you know, about security that surprised me because they really don't feel that this incumbent who's talked so much about security is bringing more of it. And I just want to ask you questions about where the unions are in general as they might fit in, let's say, to the website we've just been talking about the Peace Majority.
Well, if you look at the Peace Majority website under the occupational groups, they do include U.S. labor against war. And that's kind of the union voice. Now, it would be misleading to think that the labor movement has any substantial participation in the peace movement and in the issues that Peace Majority deals with outside of U.S. labor against war, because they don't deal with social agendas, they don't deal with security agendas, they deal with economic issues, period. They're very focused, as they should be, on the material interests of their own workers and working families. However, at some point, and we've long ago passed that point, the massive expenditures that we put and the debt financing that we put into all these wars becomes an economic issue. And I don't see organized labor as a whole at a point yet where they're recognizing that, although individual bodies, individual AFL-CIO groups and things like that have made strong votes in terms of public statements about the war and strong peace stands. But it is not part of the organized labor agenda on a broad basis yet, any more than they deal with the social cultural issues of abortion and right to life or guns or any of those other things.
Was it founded and what was the catalyst?
It was announced this past spring on the anniversary of the Iraq war invasion. In attendance were people representing both the left and the right side of the political spectrum. So, for instance, we had a fabulous talk given by Kara Hopkins, who's the editor of American Conservative. We also had a talk read by John Nichols, who writes for The Nation magazine. So, again, it's politically neutral. It's spectrum neutral. And it's all about helping the peace community become the peace vote. And it's specifically organized around a voter's pledge, which says something to the following: I will not vote for or support any candidate for president or Congress who does not make a rapid withdrawal from Iraq and preventing any future war of aggression a public position in his or her campaign. That's the Voters for Peace, Voters Pledge, and that's what the whole movement is built around, to help politicize the peace movement and get it to get electoral.
Let me just play for you a brief statement by the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
An immediate withdrawal of our troops in Iraq or the broader Middle East, as some have called for, would only embolden the terrorists and create a staging ground to launch more attacks against America and free nations. So long as I'm the president, we will stay, we will fight, and we will win the war on terror.
What you're saying then in terms of Voters for Peace is that they're going to have to defeat the policies of George W. Bush in a nutshell.
Absolutely. He's not the sole architect of those policies. Those policies were written back in the early 90s. When this was still a gleam in his eye to be in the White House. So, yes, Voters for Peace is all about defeating any candidate who is weak on peace and supporting any candidate who is strong on peace. And clearly, George Bush is perhaps the weakest on peace of any public servant we have in the country. All he can do is talk about war, war, war. And, I mean, when you hear the segment you just played from me, the complete state of denial that the man is in is deeply troubling.
You can learn more about Bill Scheer's campaign at winwithbill.org, and you can find out how the candidates from your state did when rated by the Peace Majority at peacemajority.org. For those Connecticut listeners who may be wondering how representatives in their area did, Rob Simmons rated 12%. Christopher Shays, 27%, and Nancy Johnson, 16%. They're all Republicans. Chris Larson rated 62% on the peace vote, Rosa DeLauro a bit higher at 66%, and U.S. Senator Christopher Dodd rated 58%. They're all Democrats. The website again is peacemajority.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion.